Now we invite Matt up. I'll just introduce him. This is Matt Kinnenberg. He's the one of the associate pastors at Stony Plain Alliance. Yep. And I'll just hand it over to you, Matt.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for your hospitality and having me here this morning. Like Shane said, I'm from Stony Plain Alliance, which, of course, is just north of you here, and it's a real privilege to be with you today. We're going to be doing a sermon this morning called God in This Place, and it's coming out of Genesis chapter 28. Your pastor asked me to preach on an Old Testament or New Testament passage, which knocked my socks off. Sadly, they're still on, but we'll walk through this. So before I talk, though, I'm just really grateful to be a part of this time with you, to hear the way you care for one another, the way you pray for one another. Over the door of my office, I have this blessing for my office and for our church community that prayer would be at the heart of its being. And thanks for modeling what it looks like to be a community where prayer is at the heart of its being. And I just want to point out the ways the kingdom is arriving, even in just you guys being willing just to lift one another up. And so you've been a blessing to me already, so thank you. Who here has family campfires? Anybody ever had one of those before? My family, on my mom's side, the Herringer family, every summer we'd get together growing up for what we called the Herringer family pig out. You can imagine what we did. It was mostly eating, mostly playing and having fun together, and every night, of course, we'd have a big giant campfire. And the hallmark of these campfires is my Uncle Clarence was quite the accordion player. And Clarence would bring out his accordion, he'd play through some really strange songs, we'd do some wonderful sing-alongs, and at the end of the sing-alongs, we'd share family stories. And the older generations would pass stories down to us. And one of my favorite stories that would undoubtedly come up every year was the story of my grandpa, Oscar. First of all, before I go any further, my grandpa's had the best names, Oscar and Roscoe. It's hard to beat grandpa names like that. But my grandpa Oscar, he was an accomplished runner. He'd tell stories over and over again of all the things he'd do, all the races he'd be a part of. And one of the things that they talk about often is how he'd run to catch the train. Now, you might be thinking he'd run to catch the train because he's always late. But the reality is him and his buddies would work just in the town next to Tabor and Medicine Hat. And so what they would do is they'd wait till the train had gone by because they didn't want to pay for a ticket. And they'd run to catch the train, hop on just past town, and then as soon as they got to town, they'd hop off before someone could find them. Grandpa loved running. He loved running so much. And then Grandpa got conscripted for World War II. And he was training, getting ready to go. And before him and his paratrooper team set off, Grandpa went for one last run, and during this run on the beach, he tore his knee to shreds. And that was the last day my grandpa could really run. Now, he got a bionic knee and another bionic knee later on in life, but running was never the same. Now, you could think that was a really tragic day for my grandpa. But the reality of that was he's the only one from his paratroop that survived the war. Everybody else, when they jumped out of that airplane, were gunned down, and he's the only one who made it. And so without my grandpa blowing out his knee, I wouldn't be here. My mom wouldn't be here. My uncle wouldn't have been here. And my family story would have stopped that day. So for my family, we have this central story of how God provided in the strangest of places. And even though my grandpa walked with a limp for the rest of his life, that limp was a story of God's compassion. That limp was a story of God's grace. We all have family stories. We all have narratives that we pass down that we remember, whether it's the goodness of God or maybe it's a story of pain. You know, I think of the Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin. He was one of the first men in space, if not the first man. And he got up into space, and he got past the atmosphere, and he said this, "I looked and looked and looked, but I didn't see God." He got all the way up there to where he thought God should be. And he looked around and he couldn't see God anywhere. He'd been given the story that God was just above the clouds where you couldn't see, but then he got just above the clouds, and of course he couldn't see God. And as a result, this story got passed down to the next generations. There's no God out there. God's not where he should be. And so, to a certain degree, we have all had our minds shaped by this story, by the deep secularization of the West that passed down the story of I looked and looked and looked, but I didn't see God there. Others of us have stories where we expected God to show up, to meet us in places of pain or places of loss, and it felt like he wasn't there. And for some of us, that means people who used to sit at the chairs with us are no longer here. Or you have family members that you know had been with Jesus and aren't anymore because they decided on another story. We all have stories that shape our reality. And this morning I want to share with you one of the stories that I think is really shaping my reality. But as we do, let's pray. Spirit of living God, we pray you'd fall fresh on us this morning. We thank you that your word, when it goes out, does not come back without accomplishing everything it set out. And so I step back and say, would you come and speak? We bless you, Jesus. You are good. And we long to meet with you. Thank you that you're available to us. Amen. So we're going to be reading out of the book of Genesis in chapter 28. It'll be up on the screen, although that looks a little small, so I apologize if you can't read that. So this is starting in verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of the Lord were ascending and descending on it. And there above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and will watch over you wherever you go, and I'll bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord was in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, which is the gate of heaven. Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone that he'd placed under his head, and he set it up as a pillar, and he poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, though the city used to be called Luz. And then Jacob made a vow, saying, if the Lord will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking, and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear, so that on this journey, so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God, and the stone that I have set up as a pillar will be the God's house. And all that you will give, and of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. So here's our story this morning. We have a guy named Jacob. Jacob is the son of Isaac, who is a son of Abraham. And in Jacob's story, there's this really central moment. This moment where God calls his grandpa, Abraham, out of his story. Out of a story that was about worshiping foreign gods, that was about living for themselves and whatever else, a story of fear of what would happen if the gods were upset with us. And this God, Yahweh, comes to Abraham and starts a whole different story. We read, the Lord said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to a land I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you. And whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. So Jacob has this framing story, the story that's been passed down from generation to the next. A story that he's living in, that one day our people will be so great and all of the nations will be blessed through us. And there to be a people who live in a land, in a specific place. The problem is, in our story, is Jacob's no longer there. Jacob has set off. This is a road trip story. You see, Jacob's story goes like this. He was born as a twin. And his brother was born, and he's clutching onto his brother's heel. There's deep sibling rivalry from the very beginning. And then later on, him and his brother Esau are so different. Esau is this hunter, and he likes to stay home. And Esau one day has gone out hunting, and he comes back famished. And Jacob's making a stew, and Esau says, "Give me some of your stew." And he says, "Sure, in return for your birthright." This is a terrible thing to say. Like, there's no compassion or kindness between these two brothers. Instead, he's like, "I want whatever you've got." And it says Esau is so hungry, he's like, "I'm going to die if I don't sure have whatever it is." Esau gives away his birthright, his standing as firstborn son, for a bowl of soup. You can imagine this only increases the tension between these two brothers. Then later on, as his father is about to die, Jacob pretends to be his brother. He gets his mom's help. He gets some big skins and covers his arms and his face because, much like me, he's not a very hairy person. And then he goes to his dad pretending to be his brother and receives his brother's blessing. So Jacob's not someone who should have a birthright or a blessing. He's a scoundrel. But through his being a scoundrel, he gets both. So no longer will the story continue. Abraham, Isaac, Esau. Now it's Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. So he's worried about what his brother is going to do, so his mom tries to get him out of town. So she says, "You need to get a wife. So why don't you go as far away as you can, back to where we came from, and go find a wife in a place called Haran." So I've got a map here, I believe. Whether we can read it or not, it's a whole different thing. So at the top corner where the red is pointing, that's Haran. Near the bottom is where is Beersheba. Oh, perfect. Well done. Near the bottom is Beersheba, and he's going to travel all the way to Beersheba. Now, the distance here is about 885 kilometers. This would be like if we set out this morning and started walking to Kelowna. He's got a long trek ahead of him. His mom really wants to get him out of town, doesn't she? Jacob's someone who's gotten what he had, not out of working hard or doing the right thing, but instead of tricking his father and taking advantage of his brother. Not the kind of person you expect God to use. So he sets out, he's on his way to Kelowna, and he gets as far as Lacombe, and he gets tired. The sun's setting, and he decides it's time to lay down. Now, the interesting detail is he gets to this place called Luz, which is about as far as Lacombe, and it says he stops in a certain place. It doesn't give details. It's not like this place matters. There's no A and W here. It's just a place to stop. And so he lays down, and he's ready to rest, and he does the strangest thing. He takes a rock and puts it under his head and goes to sleep. I don't know if anybody's tried to sleep with a rock under their head, but it doesn't seem like a good idea. Chances are the reason he has a rock is for protection. But in case someone comes across him on the way, he can protect himself, or maybe he's going to hide behind it. I don't know. But here, Jacob finds himself in an unlikely place, a place of no significance. And he goes to sleep. Then he has a dream. And in this dream, he hears a Led Zeppelin song about a stairway to heaven. And in this stairway, which we've got a picture of what it probably is. It's called a ziggurat. These are early temples. This would be what the Tower of Babel looked like, at least to our best guess. Now, these are to remind us, what kind of natural landscape does this remind you of? Egypt. So, and the Egyptian pyramids are based on mountains. Who here has been to the mountains before? Now, when we were singing, did you see pictures of mountains? Yeah. There's something about mountains. They draw our minds to God. Throughout human history, mountains have been places where people go to try and meet God. And so the Babylonians had tried to make their own mountain, a mountain with a stairway that they could climb and get all the way to God. Not on his terms, but on theirs. And so God frustrates their plans, as we all know. But now we have another mountain, another stairway. This one, though, isn't established by people. This is established by God. And on it, we see the angels are coming up and down. And it's this space that we get this revelation from God to Jacob. Now remember, Jacob's on the run. And what if he's not sure if the blessing should be his? Have you ever felt like you might not deserve what you're going to get? Maybe you've done not the right things, you've done the wrong things. And if people actually found out what you thought or what you did, they wouldn't want to bless you anymore, wouldn't want to be in a relationship with you anymore. I wonder what Jacob's thinking in this moment. Am I supposed to have that blessing I have? I kind of stole that. And Dad might not have known in that moment who I was, but God sure did. I bet in his lostness and lust, there's a lot of confusion in Jacob's mind. Strange space to meet God. And then you wonder, Jacob has this dream, this vision, in it there's a staircase. And at the top of the staircase, he sees the Lord. Now I wonder what kind of message you think he's going to get from God. Could it be, I see you, but you're not Esau, so I've got nothing to do with you? Or, I see you, but I'm disappointed in you. Or, I see you and I'm mad at you and I want nothing to do with you. I wonder if those stories were going through his mind. But instead, he receives this. It says, there above it stood the Lord. Or interestingly, the Hebrew could also read, there beside him stood the Lord. This isn't a distant moment. This isn't God being apart from him, but God coming down to meet him. And he says, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. And I'll give you and your descendants a land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, into the east, to the north, and to the south. And all people on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. And I'll bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised you. So here in this space, Jacob may have been worrying whether God would still want anything to do with him. And God shows up, meets him, and gives him the same promise he gave to his grandfather. My work isn't dependent on your faithfulness. My work isn't dependent on how well you perform, it seems to be. Instead, I'm going to bless you even though you haven't acted like a blessing, because that's the kind of God I am. God affirms him in spite of all the ways that this story has happened, that he's still going to bless the world through him. It's pretty amazing. Our God is a good God who does what we least expect. He's faithful to Abraham, he's faithful to Isaac, he's faithful to Jacob. He's a God who uses a man who cheated his brother out of a blessing and a birthright and still meets with him. So I wonder if anybody here is wondering if you're beyond God reaching out to. Don't ever think that you're too bad for God, that you've done too much, then he can't handle it. God is a God of kindness and compassion. He can handle whatever you bring him. Just like God reaffirmed Jacob, he affirms you. He loves you. He is for you. He's on your side. And it's beautiful. Jacob wakes up and he says this, surely the Lord was in this place and I wasn't aware of it. Surely the Lord was in this place and I wasn't aware of it. Jacob wakes up and has this realization. He may be in nowhere, but it's nowhere where God meets us. Wherever we are, God is present and available to us. He's not limited to the places where we think he should be, to the times where we think he should show up. But God meets us even in Lacombe, if you can imagine. He meets us on the way. My apologies if any of you are from Lacombe. Jacob showed up in this place that was just a certain place, a nowhere place. And yet God shows up in the certain place, a nowhere place, and says, I'm here with you. I'll never leave you. So Jacob wakes up and he sets up an Ebenezer. We've got a picture of it. Not that specific Ebenezer, just what an Ebenezer is, which is a rock that you put up in place to remember the significance of a place. This moment is so important to Jacob that he can never forget it. And not only does he not want to forget it himself, but he doesn't want the generations after him to forget it. So he sets up this rock so that every time somebody sees it, they'll remember the story. This rock, or a rock like it, functions like a campfire story. That when they get to it, they go, we're in the house of God, which is what Bethel means. We're at the place where our ancestor laid down to sleep on a rock and had the strangest dream, and in the dream, God made this promise to him. This rock reminds the people day after day, year after year, generation after generation of God's goodness. So why this story? Why has this story knocked my socks off? Well, it's because God changed my perspective years ago. About 9 years ago, my wife and I, with two little kids at the time, set off to a foreign land. We left St. Albert and we moved to a place called Hamilton in Ontario. I know, right? It felt weird and strange. A good prairie boy moving to Ontario. But I felt Jesus call me to go to seminary there, so we picked up and left everything. Now, it was to be a temporary move. 2 years in and out as quick as possible. There was goodness we felt. My brother lived like two streets away from us, and that was awesome. But that first year, I was doing as best as I could to not get to know as many people as possible. I didn't want to have any reason to stick around. And then the playoffs hit, and I'm from Calgary originally, and the Flames made it all the way to the second round, which if you think of watching Oilers games that start at 8 o'clock is bad, try being 2 hours forward. So Flames games were starting at 10, and I was up till 1 or 2, and then little kids waking up at 6, and papers to write. And during these playoff games, Alberta was pushing hard, I think, to get people from Ontario to come out, so they kept on having these Travel Alberta commercials. And in it, there's this great shot of the mountains, and specifically Waterton National Park, which is where my family has spent a lot of time on these pickups. And so I was looking at these mountains, these familiar places. And I just wanted to be home. I felt like I was on the road, not where I had been and not where I was going to be, just a certain place. And then I took a class, and it was about meeting our neighbors and being neighborhood churches. And in it, my professor challenged me to do a practice, a spiritual discipline that would help me be attuned to God in my place. And so what I did is we had a black lab at the time, and I had to take Haven for a walk every night. And so I was like, oh, I can, you know, mix these things and take advantage. And so what I did is normally what I'd have an album on is I'd walk my dog, tune out the world, and just head down and go. But I felt the invitation of the Spirit was to leave my phone at home, leave the headphones at home. And just as I tied my shoes, I said, Spirit, interrupt me however you want to today. And then I started walking. Now, to be honest, I wanted to do this as quick as possible. Like, trusted that Jesus would do something, but I'm like, if you don't, it's okay. And what ended up happening over and over again is the Spirit actually started interrupting me. You know, one night, I finished a paper at 11:30, and I was like, I still got to do my practice. The dog still needs to be walked. Luckily, it's late. No one will be out. And I got like 5 steps out of my house, and there's this guy walking by. And I was, you need to go talk to him. And I spent an hour talking to this random stranger who I'd never see again. and speaking blessing of God into his life and who he's becoming. And it was just moments of those over and over again. Not that I was doing anything amazing, but the Spirit just kept on saying, this is how I want to interrupt you today. And as I walked around that place, it became one of those places where heaven and earth met. And even though it wasn't my Haran at the end, it was a space where God showed up. We all have these spaces where God shows up. You know, I think about the time you all spend praying here every week. My church family that I'm a part of in Stony Plain, we've been a church for 83 years. And the building we used to have was a space where we prayed in often. And I heard stories from those who'd been there before about just how amazing that space was, because you could tell people prayed there, they said. The people just randomly show up off the street and it would all of a sudden be hit with this place of peace, because people have been praying there year after year. But then, you know, we accepted the call to come. I had originally come as a youth pastor. And the day after we moved, this happened. We've got a picture here. Our church burned down. It was quite disorienting, if you can imagine. For me, somewhat, for our church community, so much more. We lost our place. We were no longer where we were. We also weren't where we were going to be. We got invited into a space between. We ended up at a place called Living Waters Christian Academy, which is a great school in our community about 10 minutes away. Now, we could have just bided our time for 2 years or 3 years or a pandemic as well and everything else that came and said, we'll meet here, but this won't be a place. This will just be a thing. But incredibly, the more we got there and the more we prayed there, the more and more, even though it was a gym, it felt like a space where God was showing up over and over again. Because God is not dependent on beautiful church buildings. God just shows up. Now, personally, we all have these spaces between. The space between where we were and the space where we will be. And we can get stuck in our minds thinking it's only when we arrive that we'll see God. It's only when we arrive that we'll understand. Now, that doesn't just have to be a physical space. Maybe for some of you, it's waiting for vacation. That the push over the last few months or years has been so long. But once I get on vacation, once I hit Hawaii or Kelowna or wherever, then God will show up. or Lacombe, yes. Once we get to Lacombe. But while we're in Leduc, I don't know. Maybe it's a position at work. That if I can just get to this space, if I can just accomplish this, then God will show up. Maybe for you as a community, once our pastor's back, then. But of course, none of those things are true. God's not waiting for you to reach a destination before meeting you. He's always in a certain place, and that's wherever you are. He's always waiting and ready, because all space has the potential of meeting with God. You know, we read back in the scriptures and we read about Bethel, and we think, oh, that must have always just been the house of God. But no, it used to be Luz, and I don't even know what Luz means. I think it's Hebrew for Lacombe. But it sure became Bethel afterwards, right? Every space in all of creation is ripe for connecting with God, because God is in every space of all creation, because he is everywhere. Maybe what we need to do is just wake up to his presence among us. Maybe it's time to open our eyes. Maybe you're wondering where God is right now, and he's saying, I'm here, it's time to get up. Maybe you need someone else to help point out his presence to you. We can wake to the presence of the God who is with us, the one who we can't flee from his presence. Much like when God met Elijah on the mountain in a whisper, we can think God's only going to show up in the right places when it's big and obvious. But the truth of the matter is, it's often quiet and easy to miss. Like Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, the smallest of seeds. It's really easy to miss mustard seeds. There's a story in the book of Ezekiel. It goes like this. In the 30th year, on the fourth month of the fifth day, while I was among the exiles in the Kibar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. Now to us, that means nothing, right? It's just a story. Here are the prophets sitting by a river. The heavens are opened, and he sees visions of God. In the time of Ezekiel, though, it was believed that the gods had divided the nations up, and gods were only territorial, that God would only be the God, let's say, of Alberta, not the God of Ontario. And if you showed up in Ontario, then you were in Moloch's camp, and he's the only one who can meet you. On top of that, the people are in exile, which means they've been defeated and taken from their land. And in the ancient worldview, if one nation beat another nation, that means their God was stronger and he'd wiped out that other God. So in the last possible place where Ezekiel would expect to meet God, on the Kibar River in the middle of exile, God shows up. God's not defined by where we think he should be, in case you're wondering. There's a story in John 1:51. Jesus is talking and he says, "Very truly I tell you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God descending and ascending on the Son of Man." Where does that sound familiar from? Genesis. Jesus says he is that mountain. He is that space where heaven and earth meet, that Jesus is the place where heaven and earth meet. In his incarnation, he became localized in a place. He moved into our neighborhood, and he walked around, and it became the place where heaven and earth meet. And Jesus wasn't just available then. Jesus is constantly available now. Now this week, as I was reading through Luke, which I do with a friend who we read scripture together every week, I came across this, and I'd never noticed it before. Says he was, this is about Jesus, he was praying in a certain place. Where's that? Again, this is Genesis. Jesus is in Lacombe. He was praying in a certain place, and after he finished, one of his disciples said to him, "Lord, teach us to pray, just as John taught his disciples." I think Luke here is linking back to Genesis. And he's saying there's something about the way that that Jesus communes with the Father in prayer that his disciples see. That they look at Jesus as he prays and they go, something incredible is happening here. And so they say to Jesus right after, "Teach us to pray." Because we see that when you pray, you are perfectly united with the Father. And we want to be perfectly united with the Father as well. And so Jesus teaches them the Lord's Prayer. Now, one thing I've been learning over the last couple of years is that we are created for union with God. That we are created for life with him, to know him. And in fact, we're invited into the union of the Trinity, Jesus talks about in John 17. That this bond of love that's always existed in the Trinity is something that Jesus wants to invite us into. And that's why he died and rose again, to bring us into union with himself. And by teaching us to pray, he's teaching us how to live into this union. It's beautiful. So as we finish, I just have a quick thing to talk about. And that's that we need to slow down in order to see God in a place. Our world goes crazy. We are constantly on the move. And when we sit down, we're still on the move. It's really easy to be transported from one place to another because we, all of a sudden all we have to do is take out our phone, get a ding or get a message, and we're all of a sudden gone somewhere else. Our brains don't slow down. We are constantly hurrying about. You think of the story of Moses, though. Moses is in the wilderness, and all of a sudden he sees a bush burning. I wonder how common it is to see a bush burning in the wilderness. You know, think of the heat dome a couple summers ago, just things sparking up out of nowhere, or right now and here in our province. I'm guessing Moses had seen a bush burn before. But as he sits and watches, he goes, "This is an odd bush. It's burning, but it's not consumed." I wonder how long Moses had to sit there before he noticed that it wasn't being consumed. The same way, if we're constantly on the move, we might miss out on what God's up to. So my invitation for you is much like sitting down and tying your shoes and saying, "Spirit, interrupt me with however you will." What practice can you take to attune yourself to God's presence wherever you are? Will we take God's promises seriously? He says there's nowhere we can go to flee from his presence, that he's with us always, that nothing can separate us from his love. Jesus often meets us in the mundane, in the ordinary. And I think the invitation is taking small little practices to open our eyes up to see him at work. And so maybe it's, "Spirit, would you show me what you're up to? Would you show me where you are?" A couple summers ago, I had been sitting in my office working on whatever it was at the time, and a gentleman came in from our community. Never met him before, never met him again, but he needed someone to talk to, and this man was in such deep pain. He had had a workplace injury that had aggravated his back where he couldn't walk anymore, but then it also, the way the system worked, had aggravated his heart in a way that it was not working well anymore. And as we talked, I just felt completely useless. It's like, what do I really have to offer? But I sat and I stayed with him and listened. And the most miraculous thing happened in that moment, and I think I could have missed it really easily. As I was talking to him, his face changed for a split second. And I've only had this happen this one time. But in that moment, his face turned to look like Jesus's. And then it switched back. It was really weird. But all I could think of is where Jesus says, "When you do this for the least of me, there I am." And this invitation for Jesus, from Jesus to be, don't be in a rush. Don't be trying to move on to the next thing. But be present where you are, because that's where I am. And as well, get in creation. Our God is a God who is present in his creation. And so I invite you to embrace wonder. Eugene Peterson writes this. He says, "Wonder keeps us open-eyed, expectant, alive to life that is always more than we can account for, that always exceeds our calculations, that is always beyond anything we can make." God's longing to show you himself through his creation. Like we read about in the scriptures, all of the heavens declare the glory of the Lord, and no one was without excuse because the Creator speaks through his creation. Go for a walk. See what God's up to, where he's moving, what he's doing. One of my favorite places is this place just north of Stony Plain called Glory Hills Conservation Land, where it's just this untouched space where I can walk, and people don't know about it. So I'm telling you, don't tell anybody else. But unlike Chicago, which is like 2 minutes away, which is teeming with people always, this place is quiet. And as I walk there and see the birds and just sit in the peace, that I experience God in a different way. So would you meet God in creation? Would you remember the spaces God's met you and return to them? Would you tell the stories that need to be told? Would you allow him to teach you how to see him, how to be present to him? And would you meet him in the normal places, just like Brother Lawrence did in the dish pit? Because he's there always, and he's with you always, wherever you go. So as I leave you with this, I leave you with good news. Uri was wrong. He may have gone up to space and looked, and said, "I looked and looked and looked, and I couldn't see God." He had the wrong eyes. Wherever you look, God is there. In the mundane, in the unexpected, in the trivial, he's always present. And so I bless you to wake up to the presence of the God who is with you always. Amen.